Thank you so much, you guys. I don't know how I could possibly follow the mayor. That is incredible. I don't think I'll ever have that welcome again by anyone. So thank you so much for the mayor. Let's give her another round of applause. And thank you so much to Slow Speaks. It's really incredible when I see organizations like this that are really dedicated to bringing out progressive, radical voices in communities like this. And thank you to all of you. I know it's, you guys probably have really busy schedules, so it's not easy to, set aside time on a Saturday night to come out here. Really appreciate you guys all coming out to listen to this talk. For those who don't know, my name's Abby Martin. I'm the host of Empire Files on Telesaur English. It's a documentary and interview series that's weekly. And basically, it just talks about how every issue, internationally and domestic, needs to be seen within the lens of the US empire. And not just that, but how the US empire enforces its military might to basically secure US capital all around the world. So, on the domestic side, you really can't analyze any issue without understanding the magnitude of military spending, whether it be Flint, Flint's water in Michigan, whether it be just ridiculous defunding of public education. This is all ridiculous because you compare it to the vast amounts of military spending that we're seeing around the world with the US. And when it comes to international issues, you cannot view any international issue without seeing it through the lens of kind of the colonizers and colonized. That needs to be the way that we see the world. But not only that, we are trying to reclaim the narrative set by history's colonizers and imperialists, because as we know, history has been written by the winners until the advent of social media, and we're changing that. We're changing that every day. So we're finally showing the reality of Palestine, right? Israel is no longer able to control that narrative any longer. And so many more issues that I'm going to get into. Of course, I think people in this room already know how criminal the US empire is, but for the people who really don't understand the magnitude of what we're dealing with here, the US is the largest, most destructive military machine the world has ever seen, the largest empire the world has ever seen. There's so many goddamn bases. Top military commanders can't even tell you how many bases the US has around the world. The number sits at, I think, 900. But if you talk to military people, they'll say that there's lily pad bases that spawn off of those bases that they don't even know. So, you compare that to Russia or China, I think there's like two. And of course, we know, the US military might is larger than the next 10 countries combined. So all day we hear fear-mongering about Russia. Just keep that in mind, that our military really dwarfs not only Russia, but the next nine countries after that. We've intervened in, countless countries. I'm just going to say one example. In Latin America alone, the US has intervened 56 times, at least, that's as far as we know, to usurp the democratic processes, whether it be assassinations, coup attempts, CIA covert regime change operations on the ground, soft power propaganda. The list goes on and on and on. And that's just Latin America. So on top of that, to what the mayor was speaking of, climate change. I mean, we're talking about a military empire that consumes two-thirds of the world's resources, energy. That's insane. I mean, just think about how ridiculous that is, right? Meanwhile, the Pentagon is the world's largest polluter. Not only the wars and the military incursions, but war games, exercises in the oceans, on land. I mean, think about what that is doing to the environment. And of course, the Pentagon and the US government don't abide to international climate treaties. No, because we're the empire and we're the best. So we don't have to adhere to international law, I guess. It's a pretty good deal for those on top. Being the so-called beacon of democracy, it's quite interesting that this government provides 70% of the world's dictatorships with weapons and military training. So you guys can get into the School of Americas or just the fact that, the Saudi Arabia weapons deals where you have Trump just lauding these cartoon charts boasting about the amount of guns and military aid that we're giving Saudi Arabia. It's just astounding because we see the Parkland students, right? And all these people getting behind their righteous plight. But at the same time, we are the world's largest arms dealers. So it's just a little bit of hypocrisy there when I see leading Democrats really out to get the NRA. Meanwhile, they're complacent when it comes to the empire selling weapons to all these dictatorships. It's very, very interesting. All of this is never permitted, right? The corporate media is structured not only to protect corporate interests. When you look at the way the empire functions, the corporate media is basically an extension of the empire. So it's to secure capital, like I said, around the world. The empire does what it does with its military, its brutal military might, but the corporate media acts as an extension of that state. And it's securing capital not just for national interests. I think that we understand that global capitalism with this oppressive, economic, brutal system that we're living in, it's a global system. So when I hear Trump and all of his minions talk about globalism, I mean, that is capitalism. Capitalism is globalism. And these people who are, you know, CEOs of corporations that are in his administration, I mean, they are global capitalists. Rex Tillerson, I mean, how is he not a globalist? It makes no sense. So corporate media works as an extension of empire to not only protect corporate interests, but also to protect imperialism, to spread the word of Western domination. And again, parameters of debate are completely limited. Like, you won't hear even the word empire on mainstream media, right? I mean, people thought that I was talking about Star Wars in one talk when I said that word. I mean, it's incredible to be living in a country where the entire world, when you take international polls, they fear the U.S. more than anyone else. That's astounding. You know, we're living in a country that doesn't even understand the way that the world perceives us because, again, we're the best, right? We don't need to know the truth or how our government affects the rest of the world or has for the past century. We're painted as the freest country with the freest media. Well, according to Reporters Without Borders, the U.S. is actually 43rd. In press freedom. That's not so hot. You know, really quickly to explain how this happened before I get into my personal story and you know, the stories on the ground and how the media really does work hand in hand to manufacture consent for empire, I wanted to talk about really how we got here. Back in 1983, there used to be 50 companies that controlled most of the media networks. Like every industry under, you know, late stage capitalism, like we're seeing, gobbling up, monopolizing, really came to a head with the 1996 Telecommunications Act under President Bill Clinton. Once again, a Democrat who's basically opening massive deregulation, this time with the media, really opened the floodgates to mergers, to media mergers. Fast forward to today, six corporations control 90% of what we see, hear, and read. Six. Viacom, News Corp, Comcast, CBS, Time Warner, and Disney, and that's about to get smaller. AT&T is trying to buy Time Warner. CBS is trying to buy Viacom. And then you look at so-called, well, I think that, you know, people our age and older, I think, know that those networks on corporate media, especially that have TV affiliates, are lying to us, right? But some people trust NPR, PBS, not realizing that those are also corporate controlled. NPR is funded by oil corporations, the Koch brothers. PBS and its affiliate board members are 84% corporate, like literally on corporate boards, many of them with ties to Boeing, to banking establishments. PBS had to pull a documentary about David Koch because Kochs give funds to them. So the problem is that a lot of these boards of directors, it's just a couple hundred, right, that sit on these boards of corporate media entities, and they sit on interlocking boards with Boeing, with banks, with Monsanto. And of course, they're going to protect their interests that supersede the interests of the media corporation. And again, it all comes down to profit and protecting that capital. So, and then there's this revolving door, right, with telecom lobbyists that go straight into government. I mean, we saw Tom Wheeler under Obama. He was essentially just a lobbyist. And of course, Ajit Pai is just the biggest lobbyist shill for telecom I've ever seen, who's now running it under Trump. But I think that we need to think of corporate media as beyond, like I said, beyond the CNNs, beyond MSNBC, beyond Fox. I think that we all know that that's a joke, right? This is there's an extension of corporate media well beyond these TV networks, and that's Vox, Daily Beast. I mean, all of this is corporate media with the same owners that's kind of rebranded for the millennial generation. I know a lot of people who are like, oh, I don't watch, you know, CNN, that's trash. Like, but I'll read this and not ever question the fact that it's literally coming from the same people, just branded for a different audience. Vice, I think, is one of the worst offenders. Vice is, you know, they can cover a lot of issues. Unfortunately, all of their foreign policy coverage is garbage and really toes the line of U.S. imperialism. I mean, whether it be Venezuela, where they're out there pretending like they're badasses on the front lines, but meanwhile, just not even interviewing any of the protesters around them. It's like, why don't you just hear what these people have to say instead of speaking for them? You know, it's garbage. I mean, we're talking about a station that had that opened their doors to the Obama administration. I mean, you saw Shane Smith and people from Vice basically thinking that it was real cool and hip to have Joe Biden in the newsroom and Obama in there. I mean, that's actually not cool to have the government, you know, working hand in glove with media corporations and bringing them into your newsroom and treating them like best friends. So I thought that was pretty disgusting. All of this, I think people have woken up to the fact that corporate media is lying, right? They protect their corporate interests. That's why alternative media is on the rise. That's why people tune into social media to get their news. And it's resulted in an all-time low trust of mainstream media. But people tend to trust local news still, right? I mean, when polled, 83% of Americans trust their local news. And unfortunately, I don't know if you guys saw that Sinclair, all the anchors saying the same thing about Fox News or about fake news, sorry, just basically repeating like Trump tropes. I mean, that's not necessarily something new. This has been going on for a long time. A couple of my former colleagues from RT joined Sinclair, and I remember them complaining to me. They're like, well, this is kind of crazy. We're giving these packages that are aired at all of these local affiliates, and we basically have to follow a script. It's super dangerous when that happens because people think that these local news anchors are, you know, writing their own material, covering local events. And unfortunately, they're getting literally top-down propaganda handed to them by now Sinclair's CEO, who's a Trump supporter. Their chief political analyst was literally on Trump's campaign as an advisor. So a couple of years ago, I don't know if you guys saw Conan O'Brien used to take the Sinclair packages when it used to be kind of more about fluff, like the Easter Bunny has an extra hop in its step this year. And then everyone would say the same thing. But now it's just getting a little bit scarier because now it's literally Trump talking points out there. What if there's a terrorist attack? You know, what if there's something that actually needs to be covered in a way that's not just being fed to you? That's really dangerous when someone doesn't have the agency to talk about what's going on in their local community. So, you know, media has not only failed us as the so-called watchdogs, the fourth estate, supposed to be holding the power brokers accountable, it's become less viable as a business. Over the last 30 years, 60% of U.S. journalism jobs have basically vanished. The industry has become whiter, older, and more male, basically embodying the very power structure it's supposed to be challenging. Dissenting voices of women, people of color, labor activists, environmental activists, disabled people, LGBTQ people are completely underrepresented in the media that we have today. So I'm going to talk a little bit about, you know, how the censorship actually works. I've talked a little bit about how corporate media is structured. Now I'm going to get into how the censorship works. I don't know if you guys know anyone who's gone to journalism school or who's been to journalism school or who's in journalism school now. But basically all opinion in the mainstream, and this is hammered into you, you know, from birth in journalism school, you need to be objective. You got to be unbiased. You got to tell both sides of the story, right? Well, I'm sorry, but I think objectivity is bullshit, and I think it's dead. Because I mean, it just doesn't exist, let's be honest. No one can get up there and say they don't have an opinion. No one's going to be able to write a story without their opinion somehow eking out in the way that they're presenting that story. And I would much rather have an advocacy journalist like a Glenn Greenwald, like a John Pilger, to really lay their opinions out there and lay out, you know, the facts as they see it so I can know where they're coming from, where their bias is, and not tiptoe around this. Like I see a lot of corporate news journalists. Again, I'll go to Israel. You know, all my life, all I've heard is pro-Israel talking points. I literally didn't even know what Palestine was until I was 18. So you tell me, why is it that we need to hear both sides of the story about why they're massacring unarmed protesters in Gaza? Do I need to hear the IDF press releases about why they're gunning down protesters? I don't need to hear what the military says about why they did that, because it just justifies it. I mean, I just saw Chris Hayes. Everyone's all up in arms, like excited that Chris Hayes finally mentioned Gaza on MSNBC. Well, unfortunately, in his small little tidbit that he did about it, half of the time was spent reading a press release about the IDF, about Hamas, about their, you know, terrorists staging Hamas terror protests, I guess. So I guess that's worth, you know, being massacred. So these are the kind of things that I'm talking about. I don't need to hear what Monsanto is saying about why it poisoned an entire lake. You know, I don't need to hear about why Nestle is stealing all the fresh water aquifers in the world. Like, we don't need to hear just regurgitated government press releases or corporate press releases. I would much rather hear from the victims retelling these narratives, reclaiming these narratives, because again, it's not that it's not important what they're saying. It's just that that's literally all we've ever heard. So for the first time, we're trying to tell the other side of the story. So, I mean, again, I guess it's a good thing that I was never kind of regimented in that J school mentality, because balls to the wall from the very get-go, being an anti-war activist and getting into journalism, I've just had a much different experience where I just never fell into those traps. But I see people do that all the time. And that's why I'm an advocacy journalist. So censorship comes in many forms. It's not always the black hand of the state coming and wiping out a story, although that does happen. We've seen it on Fox News with Jane Akre taking out the bovine growth hormone story where Monsanto was an advertiser and said, kill this. Like I just said, PBS killed a David Koch story because it was bad, because they're advertised. The most censorship is self-censorship. Like I'm saying, I mean, you join corporate media, you're a careerist. You know the parameters of debate. You know the issues that are palatable, that are acceptable to protect your career. I mean, you want to advance that ladder, you know exactly what you need to do. Very rare to see journalists like me getting into like CNN thinking that they're going to really change the system from the bottom up as like lowly interns and really work their way to the top. I mean, it's just not the way it goes. So the Larry Kings and the Piers Morgans, I mean, the reason that they're where they are is because they've just played ball. You know, they know where their place is in the system and they're rewarded for that. Two other forms of censorship that are very, very prominent are backpaging and framing. So again, framing the parameters of debate. What is acceptable to talk about? Don't talk about the U.S. being, you know, an empire. Don't talk about the military spending. Don't talk about any of that. Just keep it within the framing that we allow. And also the backpaging. So this is a tactic that corporate media uses to basically say, oh no, we didn't censor the story. It's on page 56 in the tiny, tiny print. Oh yeah, no, we didn't censor that. We covered it. So for a quick example, you know, during the Iraq War, which woke me up, man, I mean, I was going back to how crazy the media was, because I remember it just utter stenography. Like everyone was just repeating ad nauseum the Bush administration's lies. But I went back and actually followed a timeline, because now their narrative will be, oh no, everyone got it wrong. It wasn't just us, it was everyone. No, that's not true. There was record global protests of literally tens of millions of people all around the world. There was actually a record amount of phone calls to Congress, which I didn't even know about, voicing dissent for the war. All of this has been erased from a national consciousness. Not only that, but you see the same Iraq war architects now being lauded on corporate media as Russia experts and resistance leaders. It's very, very stunning to me. Again, I mean, this same system, this corporate media apparatus does not uplift radical voices, obviously, right? I mean, they don't uplift any voices that are marginalized, because anyone who's radical and is going to be challenging that reigning orthodoxy is a threat. It's very obvious why they don't allow these voices in the system. And when they do, they have to mock them. They have to marginalize them. I mean, look no further than Dennis Kucinich. All they had to do was say that he saw a UFO and then he was out. You know, I mean, one of the most radical voices in Congress, and they pushed him out. I think even the Democrats themselves gerrymandered him out of there because he made them look bad, I guess. So it's incredible. I recommend everyone to check out Project Censored. Project Censored is where I started my kind of media literacy. It catalogs the top 25 censored stories every year into a book. It's a really, really phenomenal organization. If anyone's interested in getting into journalism, start there, because they're just a really great group of people who can help you train, give you guidance, and you can really contribute research to their annual book. That's really great. Really quickly, last year, a couple of their censored stories, some of them good, some of them bad, but it just shows you what we don't know. One of them was about the fossil fuel industry, how it's colonizing U.S. universities. And a quick side note to this, we were in Texas in the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey. Not only were their entire communities living in gutted out, molded homes over 2 months after the hurricane that had not seen one media or government official, and was literally living in gutted out, molded homes still, trying to help each other, but when we would go and talk to universities and try to talk to scientists there, I mean, it was very odd because they were all kind of self-censoring about the biggest culprit, which is the oil industry who controls the entire city. I mean, Houston is literally the biggest city in the world or in the country that does not have zoning. So you can have schools next to chemical plants. I mean, and that's the control that the oil industry has. It's literally top-down climate change denier legislators from the ground up, top-down. And what we found out was that this self-censorship was coming from somewhere. It was coming from the fact that oil companies basically have subsidized the education system. They own literally wings of the university. They own wings of hospitals. I mean, that's how insane it is. And when we were there, all the advertising on TV was BP, Chevron, Shell. I mean, and you know, you look at extension of corporate media, that's the domination in Texas is the oil companies. And so obviously the media is going to be an extension of holding that power. And it kind of explains why it is the way it is. I mean, people cannot speak out. They're all involved in the industry. So that was one of the censored stories from last year. Another one is a Seattle activist group has successfully defunded police on their campus. Another one with all this bemoaning about free speech on campus and how we can't allow conservatives to have free speech. Well, behind the scenes, Robert Mercer and other right-wing billionaires are actually passing legislation on campus to restrict actual free speech and actually expel students who protest. So that's incredible. That's happening. Lead contamination around the country. There are certain cities that have lead contamination three times Flint's, like, at its highest. These are things that we should know, right? And of course, the big banger is that the Army has spent $6 trillion that it cannot account for of taxpayer money. $6 trillion. Wow, that could be spent for a lot of good here. It's not just this, though. It's also algorithms. You know, we look at net neutrality. This is a huge fight right now. Net neutrality has been semi-dead for a while because of these algorithms that have been instated across social media, across Google, that have severely restricted your access and your democratized ability to research information and information gathering. So it's pretty bad. And we cannot let these Silicon Valley giants off the hook either. YouTube, Google, Facebook, I mean, they have all not only backpaged state media like Telesur and RT to acquiesce to power and basically say, oh no, even if there's not a law, we're just going to preemptively do this for the government just based on the hysteria alone. I mean, that's pretty fucking scary. But they are all preemptively doing this to combat Russiagate. So already RT and Telesur are seeing everything drop drastically. The view counts, you can barely even find my videos on YouTube. You have to go through several pages. Even if you type in the title, it's just outrageous. And there's warning signs on YouTube now by state-funded broadcasters, but oddly enough, not for corporate-funded broadcasters, right? And for NPR, BBC, it doesn't say funded by Monsanto, Koch Brothers, or Chevron. It just says nothing. So, you know, it's selective. So how does corporate media serve the empire? Well, it might as well be state media. I mean, here we are bemoaning RT, China, state TV. Corporate media works on behalf of the state. I mean, it really is one and the same. It's literally just a cover and extension of financial hegemony of Western capital. DC journalists are stenographers. They just serve to bolster narratives by power brokers. I mean, look at, I don't know if you guys saw that tweet from the Department of Defense. This is incredible. Imagine this being in North Korea. The Department of Defense tweets on Oscars Day. They say, great, everyone watch the Oscars. They're like, we work really closely with Hollywood to make sure our military is portrayed correctly. I mean, just admitting, like, just boasting about how closely they work. And it is true. I mean, they've edited scripts. They really closely work. Anytime the military is portrayed in a Hollywood movie, they work to give it props. And they don't, I mean, there's very few movies that actually go counter to the dominant narrative about the US being great and good. So it's just amazing to see them like boasting about that. Cause I feel like if that were in North Korea, people would be like, oh, ha, ha, you guys are freaking crazy propagandists. Like you're like literally openly admitting that you work with the entertainment industry to propagandize people. Well, I guess no one bats an eye when it happens here. You know, there are obvious examples of the corporate media literally staging events to sell war. Two famous examples is the toppling of the Saddam statue and the Iraq invasion. That was all staged for the media pool. And also the Kuwaiti actress who ended up being the daughter of a Kuwaiti ambassador back in the Gulf War lead up, who said that Saddam's forces were throwing babies out of incubators in a congressional testimony. That ended up being completely fake, run by a PR group. So how many other things are going on like this that we don't know about? This is just what we do know about. I mean, again, the Iraq war propaganda. New York Times and Washington Post were the worst offenders. I mean, it's a shame that these papers are still considered the papers of record, and really set the tone and narrative for the entire country coming out of D.C. And they all just post outright propaganda and lies, sourcing anonymous government officials all the time. Once you like really know how to like become media literate and read through this propaganda, it's always anonymous government officials, because these people don't want to lose their access. At the end of the day, all they want is a ticket to the White House correspondence dinner. You know, they're not really there to challenge power. They're there to work with power and sell their story. I've seen it time and again being in D.C. It's quite astounding. And again, not just oil companies, but when you watch corporate media today, and also on all these affiliates, Vox, Daily Beast, I mean, you'll see Boeing, Raytheon, Lockheed Martin advertisements. I doubt any of us are trying to buy tanks like watching the media. So why are they advertising us? Well, it's more what the, you know, securing their, like the network's control. Like the networks are funded by defense contractors. That's who's advertising to them. That's who's giving them profits. So it's not too surprising to see the parameters of debate limited, where you can't really talk about how the U.S. is a destructive, crazy empire that's, you know, the rest of the world lives in fear of what we're going to do next, and who we're going to kill next, because they're funded by defense contractors, literally. And it's not just the advertising. It's the cycle of guests and people who are quoted in these articles. It's not just anonymous government officials. It's literally general after general, defense contractor official after defense contractor official, and then just like straight up intelligence people. And I'll get into that in a second of how many people are really involved in this apparatus. In 2016, you know, going back to the climate change thing, corporate media spent 96 minutes in the entire year of covering climate change. I mean, this was a year of like, I mean, we're in such catastrophic phase of climate change that it's irreversible. I mean, we're beyond the point where we can actually turn things around. So it's just amazing. It's amazing to ignore the most pressing issue facing humanity. And that's exactly what they're doing. But we know why, right? We know who their advertisers are. You know, Obama, Bush, when Bush left, you know, the corporate media was working hand in glove with Bush to sell the war. His approval rating was skyrocketed after 9/11. And the corporate media basically worked as lackeys to help him do whatever he wanted, from the Patriot Act, the Iraq War, Afghanistan, still considered the smart war. I don't know how. But during Obama, it continued. You know, the media liked Obama. For the most part, they never really talked about his drone warfare. They never talked about the fact that he targeted whistleblowers and hackers, and the fact that he charged 8 journalists under the Espionage Act to go to prison for doing God knows what. I mean, everything from leaking classified information to just, I don't know, talking to the wrong person in D.C. So 8 people charged under Obama. You know, Manning tortured for 8 years in prison. Let's not forget that. Snowden living in exile. And Assange is still indefinitely detained in an embassy. I mean, this was all under Obama. So on top of all of this, there's tens of millions of dollars being spent around the world under the guise of, you know, free media like Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, all of these soft regime change operations going on everywhere from Cuba to Venezuela. I mean, Russia, everywhere has it. The U.S. has extensions of this media propaganda everywhere. So the couple stories that I'm going to tell are all personal examples of how the media is used to promote U.S. interests and demonize its official enemies. Basically, the countries that haven't succumbed to its complete and total economic hegemony, and the people who dissent against it are marginalized, oppressed, and ostracized. As I mentioned, you know, I woke up during the Iraq War. I was a freshman in college. I had a kind of a crash course in imperialism and militarism and how we basically colonized the planet over the last 100 years. It was a very stifling climate. I remember people around me in college cheering on the bombing of Baghdad, and I just felt really sick to my stomach. And I didn't understand at the time why the media was doing it. I just blamed Bush. It took me a while to come to the awakening that it wasn't just Bush. It was the Democrats. You know, Nancy Pelosi, I'll never forget her saying impeachment was off the table, even though President Bush had committed like several impeachable offenses. That's off the table, though. They basically collaborated together to sell war and militarism. They covered for Bush's war crimes. As we know, all the Bush war criminals are still walking around. I mean, Bush, for fuck's sake, made a book of all the dead soldiers in Iraq. He literally painted soldiers that had died because of his lies and is going around on a book tour, being embraced by people like Oprah, who we should not support for president. and, you know, it's just astounding to me that this is happening. These people should be in prison. Unfortunately, because Obama decided to look forward and not back, we have the CIA, one of the CIA torturers now back running the CIA. So, you know, basically I realized that the criminality extended far beyond Bush. It encompassed the entire media establishment. But it takes you a while to come to that really deep political awakening and really understanding, you know, how the system operates and how it's really just capitalism is the root. And, you know, being an anti-war activist, realizing that the media was censored, the media was selling us this, so we needed a free and open media to really push any issue. It doesn't matter what your passion is. It doesn't matter what your issue is. You need a free and open media to do so. I mean, so I just became very passionate about media literacy. I understood that citizen journalism is crucial to cover grassroots movements. Otherwise, we're never going to know about them if Slow Speaks wasn't around. I mean, the few and far between. We need to support these groups that are uplifting voices on the ground. I started volunteering with Pacifica Radio, Project Censored, like I talked about, and I just taught myself video production. Luckily, the Bay Area had a really, really great faculty in Berkeley Community Radio to teach me. And I think that there's that ability everywhere. If you're interested and you don't have the money to buy a lot of software and you know, go to classes and stuff, that those tools are available for you out there. And you can really become self-taught in this stuff. So I started Media Roots. It was a citizen journalism hub. It was kind of an aggregate of censored information that I felt like wasn't being uplifted enough. And Occupy Wall Street erupted in my backyard of Oakland. I was out there every single day covering the people who were there. Of course, every single corporate media outlet was mocking it. I don't know if you guys remember the coverage. It was pretty ludicrous. They didn't even bother to cover it until it was like a month in. I was standing next to Scott Olson when he got shot with a tear gas projectile at point blank range. And luckily my footage there was able to help him win his case against the Oakland PD. But it just shows you how important it is to be there filming, especially when police are committing crimes. And the only outlet that was out there that was covering the protest fairly was Russia Today. And whatever you think about Russia Today, that's one thing. But that is definitely, that was amazing. I mean, for people who were, you know, grassroots activists and who were getting mocked by everyone, it was incredible to see an international news station out there in the streets giving them space and giving them a voice. And I became kind of the liaison for RT there. And then I decided to join RT and take my opinions to an international stage on a show called Breaking the Set. Now, really quickly about state media, it's an interesting fit into the global hegemony of corporate media domination, because there are some outlets, of course, that don't rely on corporate sponsorship. They rely on state funds, like Russia Today, like Telesur, like CCTV, and Press TV coming out of Iran. They fit outside of the periphery of Western news domination and that corporate domination, and they really allow spaces, good or bad, you could argue, for radical voices that are not allowed on mainstream platforms that rebuke corporations and the war machine. I mean, that's why I wanted to join. I knew that going into mainstream media, you simply will not be able to talk about corporations in the way that I could, and you wouldn't be able to talk about war, which are like the two main issues that I feel like I need to be talking about. So I decided to join RT. And what I quickly realized in DC is access is the game, baby. Access is the game. Really quick story. Right when I got there, right out of the gates, I made a press pass for myself before I even got one from RT for Media Roots. And I went to Congress and I was going to confront Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, about Mitt Romney. He had just endorsed for Mitt Romney. And I was going to go to a public event where, you know, people can go and ask him questions. And I saw him walking toward me in the congressional hall. And I was like, oh, Rand, here, why did you support Mitt Romney? And he just kind of puts his head down and keeps walking. And I was like, oh, that sucked. And I thought that was the end of it. Well, little did I know that a week later, the Capitol Police would be calling RT to threaten to arrest me for stalking and harassment of a representative. They threatened to not only revoke my press credentials, but everyone at RT's press credentials, because I said that I was I wasn't authorized to ask him a question in Congress without having like an authorized meeting or something with him. So I was just like, send him fucking over here. It was like, have him arrest me in front of RT for asking asking a senator a question. Film it. I was like, why don't you film it? This is great. Great TV. But it turned out it was all bluffs, right? The guy basically just wanted me to, he wanted to get me into Congress. And it's amazing. I really wish I filmed this. One of the things I regret. So I end up like meeting with this guy from the Senate Media Relations Committee at the Capitol building who was like, okay, he's like, you're not going to get arrested. He's like, just come here and come to this meeting. So I go into this room. It was basically like an interrogation room, a table with all the bureau chiefs of corporate media, CNN bureau chief, Fox News bureau chief, and it just goes down the list. And here I am. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? And these people were just sat me down and they're like, look, we've worked really hard to get where we are. We've worked really hard to get the access that we have, and we just can't have people like you coming in and ruining it. They're like, whatever you did that's unacceptable, you have to basically play ball to do what we're, and to get where we are, which is a really great place. So I was just like, this is surreal. This is surreal. So basically you got to play the game. If you even want, I mean, these people don't do meetings. Like they were like, why didn't you schedule a meeting with Rand? I was like, that's not possible. Like these people don't do meetings with RT journalists. So it was just a really astute insight on how DC operates. And access is the name of the game. Again, these people just want tickets to the White House Correspondents' Center. They just want to be friends with politicians. And that's why there's such a revolving door around them. Back to RT, though. It's just amazing to have worked there and to see the Russia-phobia get worse and worse and worse. Look, the funding is in the name. Everyone knows that Russia funds Russia Today. You know the perspective that comes along with it. I personally think it's an important perspective, especially when the entire media apparatus and establishment is basically trying to get us on a war foot with Russia. I think it's important to have the Russian perspective. Why not? Like, we should know what Russia has to say about stuff. I mean, that's good. It's not a cartoonish depiction like the media says, where we have a round table with Putin, where we get our talking points every morning from our dear leader. I literally just did what I wanted. I was able to pave editorial freedom that people literally will never be able to do at corporate media networks. For example, I put my job on the line several times working for RT. I disagreed with the coverage of the network several times. I told my boss that I would walk out the door if he didn't let me just speak my mind on air. And I did several times. I spoke out against the MH-70 flight that was shot down potentially by Russian insurgents in Ukraine. I talked openly about that. I talked about the Crimea incursion, just about the coverage that I didn't agree with. It reminded me a lot of the Iraq war coverage where it showed soldiers getting greeted with cookies and flowers. And while that was happening, I felt like it was too one-sided from RT. I felt like, why give them that propaganda that they say that we are? Why be that Fox News when we could actually be more instructive about what's happening? So I, the fact that I was able to do that, and I told my boss, if you don't let me do this, I'm going to walk out, showed me that everyone can do that. Literally anyone working at media could do that. Like they could put their jobs in the line and say, no, I'm not going to cover the missing Malaysian airliner or whatever. Remember when CNN literally covered this missing Malaysian airliner for like 2 months straight, where Don Lemon just had like cartoon graphs and he's like walking all around the studio. I mean, for literally 2 months straight, they didn't have to. He could have said no. Or Chris Hayes could have said, I'm not going to read the IDF press release. I'm just not. I'm going to talk from my heart about what I feel about what's going on in Gaza. Unfortunately, they don't. So you have to ask yourself, why is it that I, on a Putin-controlled propaganda network, was able to do that? It must not be that hard. And if it is, maybe you're in the wrong industry, or maybe you're not doing your job correctly. So, what was really amazing, though, about this whole thing is what happened to me after I spoke out on RT. One second. So for one day, I was deemed an anti-Russian hero all around the world. Front page of the London Express, like the Metro Times, like everywhere. I was getting phone calls from Germany, reporters all around the world were like, who is this anti-Russian hero that's speaking out on RT? Of course, ignoring that for the past 2 years, I was speaking out daily against U.S. imperialism, U.S., you know, corporations, but they ignored all of that and just hyper-focused on this one rant against RT, because of course they did, right? But here's where it gets real crazy. I don't know if you guys remember this. It was really interesting. It was, I spoke out on RT, and then there was a girl who spoke out the day after and resigned on air. Her name was Liz Wall. And she was my friend, or so I thought. I mean, she was totally apolitical, never had a political bone in her body. She was just there to just read the news. She never even voiced concern to me that she thought RT was like propaganda or anything. So here I go. I go and speak out against the network's coverage. The next day, or maybe it was 2 days after, Liz resigns on air. So that automatically usurped my thing. And then basically all the coverage was on her. But here's where it gets really interesting. What we found out later was that a neoconservative think tank named the Foreign Policy Initiative, who basically consists of Bill Kristol, who's one of the chief Iraq war architects. Now stay with me here. It's crazy. It's like House of Cards. Bill Kristol's henchmen work for this think tank called the Foreign Policy Initiative. It's basically a rebranded effort on the Project for a New American Century, which all the Bush administration, you know, basically right after 9/11, they put that into implementation. So Bill Kristol's think tank, before Liz spoke out, was fostering this campaign because they knew somehow that she was going to resign. And so they said, everyone tune into RT. Something big is about to happen. Everyone tune into RT. Something big is about to happen. And then what I saw, what happened after that is Liz had this whole media tour lined up with this guy named Jamie Kirchick, who I found out works directly for Bill Kristol. So long story short, it was an engineered stunt, basically. I became a pariah because I didn't play ball. I immediately went on these interviews and I was like, yeah, I disagree with this, but like corporate propaganda, you know, like I told Piers Morgan, he had me on and I was like, you guys are corporate propagandists. Like, you know, you guys are warmongering every day. So they dropped me pretty quickly. They didn't really want me out there combating that narrative, even in light of what I had done. I went on NPR. I talked to Bob Garfield, who said, you know, you're working for an overt propaganda network. And I said, you're funded by oil companies. I mean, let's lay it out on the table here, Bob. You know, but it really fell apart, because Liz really took over with this like engineered stunt, like very Machiavellian House of Cards style. And basically every interview she gives, she's just like reading from a paper, basically giving her talking points. So it was just astounding to see someone from RT was able to speak out. Right. And I was using that to say, look, as much as I disagreed with what RT was saying at the time, they let me do this. They let me pave editorial freedom. What does that say about the so-called Putin propaganda network? They allowed me to do this. They allowed me to speak out against my funder. What does that say about you? Can you speak out against this? Can you speak out against that? So they didn't like that at all because I was making RT credible, right? I was showing that, hey, you could do this even on a Putin propaganda network. You could talk about Russia and Putin. They didn't like that at all. So they wanted to turn to Liz, overshadow what I did. And then you see the media demonize me after that. I was called a crazy conspiracy theorist. You saw this Bill Kristol henchman guy go on all, you know, Lawrence O'Donnell and went across the news circuits and was basically calling me crazy, conspiracy theorist. I mean, everything out of the books, right? It was really astonishing because as a corporate media analyst for so long, like it was really surreal to see myself as the story and like be manipulated in such a bizarre way, especially with like Iraq war architects like pulling the strings behind it. It was nuts. What is Liz doing now? Well, she's working for the State Department and is the Israeli government actually doing overt propaganda for them. So it all worked out for her. But I'll never forget that because it told you everything. It was so just like an episode of House of Cards. I mean, the shit that goes on behind the scenes that we don't know. I mean, I only know this because it happened to me. But people who probably remember that incident are like, oh yeah, you spoke out and then this girl resigned live on air. Like, go for it. Like, that's really cool. She did that. But like, it's all fake. It was all staged to discredit RT in the end. So The experience made me realize, again, journalists could do this. They choose not to. Fast forward 2 years later after that, when the DNI report came out. This was the long-awaited report to prove Russian hacking, right? We were all waiting with bated breath. These 17 intelligence agencies were finally going to tell us what the evidence was. Well, I was quite astonished to learn that half of the DNI report was actually about my show on RT. This was literally the intelligence agencies, read it yourself, talks about breaking the set as fomenting radical discontent, talking about Hillary Clinton, basically paving the way for Trump, I guess. This is a show that ended 2 years before the election that they were saying was literally the example of why Russian propaganda cost us Hillary. So once I saw my show in the official intelligence report, I was just like, this is madness. I mean, it is utter madness. Literally half of the report is about RT. And when you look at what they're talking about, it's not like we were on there praising Putin. You know, we were literally like, you can even look at the report and see what is considered this dangerous propaganda that we were fomenting radical discontent about. Literally telling the truth about this country. Fracking. Things that have huge social movements behind it are now just dismissed as Russian propaganda. I mean, this DNI report says my show talking about Occupy Wall Street, talking about greed and inequality in a country where half of the people are living in poverty, a literal reality of this country, that's Russian propaganda. That cost us Hillary. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And again, like if I wasn't in the report, I probably wouldn't even know how insane this is. But because I was literally in it and the show was just talking about truth about this country, that shows you what a threat. Telling the truth. Like you said before, democracy is not compatible with the system. Well, I mean, look no further. I mean, if you tell the truth about the fact that half the country doesn't have more than $1,000 in their bank account, I mean, they're living paycheck to paycheck, that's considered Russian propaganda. That's dangerous to democracy, according to our intelligence agencies. I mean, just think about how fucked up that is, you guys. That's why, you know, I didn't leave RT because it was a propaganda network. I left because I wanted to do more in-depth investigations in the field. I felt like talking about Palestine, you know, it's really great, but I wanted to go there and really talk to the people. And it's really hard to understand what's going on, especially when you look at Venezuela. I mean, God, talk about a media narrative that's just painted in the most ridiculous, distorted way. So I mean, going there and talking to the people, and it just gives you a completely different insight. Telesaur is another kind of alternative, like I was saying, to this corporate media hegemony. It was created as a joint project by Fidel Castro and Hugo Chavez. It's funded by multiple Latin American countries. And I have complete and total editorial freedom, 100%. I don't have a boss. I do the show. I sell it to them. I've never had anything vetted. I've interviewed President Correa. And I mean, can you imagine interviewing like Trump and not having your questions vetted here? Like, it's just ridiculous. Like, no one has ever looked over my shoulder. But of course, you'll hear that Telesaur is just propaganda as well, and you can't take it seriously. So, you know, you can't win. I'm going to go into Palestine really quickly because it's really part and parcel with the way the media operates here, is it has its client states around the world that it uses as battering rams and garrisons. So Israel is one of those client states from the U.S. empire, works very, very closely with our media to propagandize and manufacture consent about that situation. You know, we're told all of our lives that it's the most complicated situation in the world. Oh, they've been fighting over there for hundreds of years. That's not true. At all. Again, it's colonized and colonizers. So again, putting the world in that purview of understanding, you know, how did we get here? It didn't just happen in a vacuum. It's a colonized state under occupation. So that context is pretty important when we're hearing about this. You know, every media story about this great march of return, where I think the numbers up to 30 Palestinians unarmed that were massacred, every single Western news story, including Al Jazeera, says clashes. They're just like clashes at the border leaves X amount dead. Clashes? That's what you call massacring unarmed protesters. That's really interesting. So that's really crazy, you guys. We need to look at the language being used and break through that language. So Palestine, when I went there, it was incredible. I mean, I was there for a month. I was recognized more there than I have been anywhere else. And not to toot my own horn, it's just because people do not give sympathy or understand the Palestinian plight on like mainstream media ever. So when they saw an anchor on RT talking about Palestinians like they were not terrorists, that went viral in Palestine. And there's very little people who have really put themselves out there to do so. So the solidarity was very important and the visibility was very important for Palestinians. This is such a third rail issue. I mean, I've talked to so many journalists who are like, yeah, I totally agree with you, but I can't ever say anything because I'll lose my job. You just can't touch it. I mean, I'm so smeared with the Israel stuff. I mean, for example, Al Jazeera just had to cancel a documentary because of the Israeli lobby that was basically exposing the multiple fronts, spy fronts of Israel operating within this country to smear its critics. So that's going on. And who knows the extent of that operation? You know, it's the media, like I said, is so pro-Israel, just 100% uniformly pro-Israel. I didn't even know what Palestine was until I was 18. It's only when the most egregious war crimes take place that they even have to acknowledge the humanity of Palestinians. A really quick story, when I was at RT, back during Operation Pillar of Cloud, of course, every couple of years, Israeli soldiers just massacre a bunch of Palestinians in Gaza. And this was no different. This was Operation Pillar of Cloud. They have really bizarre names for their genocidal operations. But there's a tower in Gaza called the Al-Sharok Journalist Tower, and it houses RT, it housed France 24, and several other journalist entities. Well, I was out there on RT talking every day about the war crimes that were going on in Gaza. And a couple days after that, they bombed the journalist tower, and a France 24 journalist got his leg blown off. And we tried to reach the spokespeople because RT, again, is an extension of Russia. And so we were trying to get an answer by proxy of why that happened. Like, why did you target a journalist tower there? That's a war crime. And they basically responded saying, your network has taken a side in the coverage. Basically meaning that I was out there talking about Israeli war crimes. Therefore, your journalists are now a target to be executed. I mean, it's just unbelievable what happened. Again, and Avita Lobovitch, the IDF spokesperson, said all journalists in Gaza are basically Hamas. You know, if you're a Hamas target. So if you're in Gaza and you're a journalist, then they can justify executing you. And they just killed another journalist today. When I was in Palestine, I really wanted to get into Gaza. Of course, being in the West Bank is traumatizing enough. People don't understand that this is under brutal military occupation, the most dehumanizing occupation you can imagine, going through checkpoints where they can arbitrarily block off streets and make people walk miles to their homes. I mean, just the most ridiculous oppression and visible apartheid in places like Hebron. But I really wanted to get into Gaza because, of course, this is one of the greatest humanitarian crises that I'm funding with my tax dollars, and I really wanted to expose the reality there. Unfortunately, I was banned. I was banned by the Israeli press minister himself, wrote me a personal letter saying I was an Iranian agent, which was weird. I thought that I was a Russian agent, and then I was like, okay, maybe I'm a Venezuelan agent, but an Iranian agent? Like, how the fuck did that happen? So he also just said, you're not a journalist, you're a propagandist, so why would I allow you in? And I think that for them, you know, the press coverage of banning me from Gaza was less than they would get from me going into Gaza and showing the utter devastation and just complete rubble still left from the 2014 massacre. They wanted to hide the truth about what's happening. You know, even Israelis can't get into Gaza. Like, it's outrageous. Coming back from Israel, I went on the Joe Rogan podcast and I talked about my experiences in Palestine, and it went viral. And of course, anyone on a stage that has a lot of views, that's not permitted. And so you're going to see the full force of the Israeli lobby come down on you for anyone who really talks about Palestinians in a humane way. And that's exactly what happened. I spoke on Joe Rogan's show. A couple weeks later, there was a huge campaign, thousands of emails, phone calls to Joe Rogan saying, boycott her, never have her on. You need to have on a pro-Israel person to counter her lies. This organization called Stand With Us, who is literally directly funded by the Israeli government to correct the record, and with war rooms, everything from Wikipedia to YouTube. I don't really know what they do, but they you know, they produced videos trying to debunk what I said, totally mischaracterizing what I said. I mean, it was just stunning. It was stunning to see how much money was spent just to smear me from this organization, how much time and energy was spent from this organization, which is, again, funded directly by the Israeli government, to smear me. So this will happen. This is why, you know, people don't want to go through that. This is why you really don't see journalists talking about this issue. I don't think it's, you know, I don't think the Israeli lobby controls the government. I don't think anything like that. I think that Israel is just a necessity for the U.S. empire. I think, again, it serves as a battering ram, as a garrison for the U.S. That's why we love having it as our closest ally. And that's why we use it geopolitically and strategically in the Middle East, everything from Syria to Iran. I mean, we're talking about a country that's surrounded by some states that are kind of post-colonial, semi-independent states, meaning they're independent from that Western capitalist hegemony. So we want that in the Middle East. We want kind of like a lapdog to do whatever the hell we want. And even today, you know, right before this event, I interviewed Max Blumenthal on Empire Files, and the video is being banned. I just saw yesterday that it's banned in 28 countries. So someone, again, I was talking about, you know, this is right after the Great March of Return. All these unarmed protesters are getting gunned down. Max Blumenthal was talking about the strategy of breaking the bones, how Israeli soldiers break the bones and also shoot to cripple, which is a tactic that they use to humiliate and demobilize the front lines of these protests. And they banned it. The video is now unavailable to watch in 28 countries because of a legal complaint that I just can't do anything about. So again, it's just like reliance on these Silicon Valley companies. I mean, we've all put our trust in them for the last 10 years. And where has that gotten us? It's gotten us censorship, backpaging. And it's really unfortunate because I think that it's set us back so much where we're just going to have to be fighting to get the content still up that we've put up. That's why I think we really need to reach out to like hosting stuff ourselves, even if it's not as high quality as YouTube and stuff. We got to get one step ahead of these companies. I wanted to get into Venezuela because this is a perfect example of the lockstep media just picking an enemy. Picking an enemy. Pick a country and the media will tell you if it's our friend or our foe. Iran, China, Russia, Korea, Cuba, all brutal dictatorships, right? That we miraculously can provide regime change for. It's quite astounding. I mean, they're all brutal regimes. They're all dictatorships. They don't have democracy. They don't have elections. In terms of Venezuela, I mean, we're talking about a progressive, independent change that broke the chains of colonialism. So, of course, the U.S. has always tried to do regime change, you know, coup after coup, the funding of the opposition. You know, Hugo Chavez, love him or hate him, I mean, they did try to pave a different path for that country. They tried to use their resources to benefit the people, not corporations. That media uniformity of Venezuela is doing nothing else but to foment support for regime change. There's no other purpose for it. This is aside from the CIA on the ground, like I said, doing soft regime change operations in Venezuela. So I went there with my own eyes. You know, I went there and I was scared. I saw how crazy the coverage was. I saw, this is the thing. I mean, until you really go, it's hard to know the truth because the media is literally all saying one thing. And before I went, you know, Telesur is funded in part by Venezuela. And I had a meeting with my, like, the producer who buys the show. And I was like, look, I'm going to tell exactly what I see. You know me. I was like, just to let you know, like, I'm going down there with a completely open mind and I'm going to report exactly what I see. And he said, I wouldn't expect you to do anything else. And that's exactly what I did. And I was very, very stunned to learn that it's pretty much the opposite of what we hear. yes, there, you know, there is like widespread issues. For example, the toilet paper thing. I mean, it's really weird. Like, I'll give you one example of going to supermarkets. You see, like, CNN is there, and they're like, oh, man, they're like, oh, dude, it's so dangerous outside. They're like, we're going to do hidden camera footage and, like, show you how fucked up it is and, like, how there's no toilet paper and how the supermarkets are just stripped. Well, we did hidden camera footage and went in plenty of our own supermarkets. And what we found was a lot of them are fully stocked. What's very strange to me is that a lot of them have paper products, napkins, paper towels, like feminine hygiene products, but then they just won't have toilet paper. So then you have to ask yourself, why is it that they can't manufacture toilet paper, but they can manufacture all these other paper products? And then you kind of learn that there's like an economic warfare going on, because Venezuela is also like a lot of corporations. It's not a socialist country. It's kind of semi-socialist. So you have like a lot of economic warfare going on behalf of the US. And it's not just that. I'm just saying there's a bigger story than what we hear in the media. It's not just, you know, oh, people are suffering because they don't have toilet. It's like, no, dude, there's so much else going on. And, you know, we went to tens of thousands strong protests in support of the government. Again, love it or hate it, this is a reality. Chavista and Maduro are hugely popular among poor and people of color in Venezuela, among the masses who are not, you know, the more wealthy, more elite, and better off people. And that's just a fucking reality. And so to not hear that reality is extremely detrimental to us. That's the truth. So to go there and actually try to, you know, cover both sides. I was like, well, I'm going to cover the side that's not talked about, but I also cover the side that is talked about. And I went into these guarimbas, like I went to the protests, and unlike Vice, where I'm just running around with like protest porn, I went and I was like, who are you guys? Like, I want to go talk to you and find out why you're protesting. And it was very strange. A lot of them didn't know. One person said, I can't be an entrepreneur here. And I'm like, that's why you have a Molotov fucking cocktail in your hand, is because you can't like own a business? Like, what the hell is going on here? It was like bonkers, you know? So it was a lot of like disaffected youth who actually didn't really have like a unified ideology. And it was just insane. I mean, it's just insane to see everyone, again, from Vice to Al Jazeera, covering these protests as just total badass protesters who are like, you know, basically staving off this totalitarian police force that's gunning them down in the streets. What I saw when I was there was quite different, especially coming from Occupy Wall Street, where I saw like very brutal crackdowns from police on unarmed protesters. You know, we're on the freeways of Venezuela and there's these guarimba protesters, and they call them guarimbas because they're like, you know, the fire barricades. They're very dangerous. And we were there and I was interviewing these people and they were like, don't film us. They're like, film what the government does to us. And I was like, okay, okay. So I pretended, I mean, you basically can die. I mean, they lynch journalists and they burn people alive. I mean, we're talking about a fascist element there that is consistent largely in the protests that you see. This is not talked about on the mainstream media. So there's a fascist, very vibrant element there that has lynched people, burned them alive, who are Chavista, etc. So I was very scared and I was just like pretending like I was playing, you know, I was just like playing along. I'm like, I'm here to cover you. Like I'm Western media, I'm American media. So they would like not lynch me or kill me. And then I just followed them around and was interviewing them the whole time. I advise everyone to check it out because it's stunning. On these freeways, they would barricade huge fire barricades where like cars are, you know, careening off like cliffs trying to get around these fires that they would start. And then they also commandeered like several 18-wheel trucks on the freeway, like pulled people out and would like try to set them on fire or like barricade them off. And the night that we were watching this, there was no police officers at all. Like there was literally no police presence whatsoever. So, I mean, after that, I was like, this is insane. The fact that protesters are doing this. Long story short, I mean, you look at the targets there, it's food facilities, it's production warehouses. I mean, they were burning down huge stockpiles of food. So it's like, okay, if this is about starvation, why are you burning all the food? I mean, it's really just to make the government look as bad as possible. And I'm not saying the government's perfect. I'm just saying this is the way the media operates, because we want to foment regime change against Venezuela. And that's a fact. And Trump is all about it. And, you know, no one goes and talks to these people. So what happened after we left? So I did not realize how crazy things were going to get. I just thought, okay, cool. We got a different side of the story and we're going to tell that side of the story, but we're also going to tell, you know, we're going to give the protesters perspective. We're basically just going to show the voices that we got and have them tell their own story. Well, unfortunately, because we talked about how the protesters were actually responsible for the majority of deaths. You know, there was this death toll that was being lauded around in the media, like Maduro responsible for 120 dead in Venezuela. But when you look at the actual breakdown of the deaths, it was the vast majority were caused directly by the protesters, with either these flaming guarimbas where people would careen and drive off cliffs, or actual just gunshots, executions at these protests. Molotov cocktails, the lynchings. There were several lynchings and people who were burned alive. So just talking about that, literally just telling the facts, and I cross-reference this with the funeral records and press releases of these people's deaths. a lot of these people were politically targeted too, like Chavistas or candidates that were going to be in the Constituent Assembly. And what happened? Well, I got a lynch mob after me. We had to flee. I don't even know if I can go back to the country because there was such a hysterical outcry from the opposition in Venezuela. And I wasn't even trying to I was just like literally just trying to do my job, you know, tell both sides of the story. But unfortunately, it wasn't what they wanted. They wanted just that one-sided news coverage that we see all over the media about how fucked up what Maduro is doing and how he's massacring everyone. So, you know, painting them in a semi-bad light and telling the truth about what they were doing basically got hundreds of death threats, lynch threats, specifically lynch threats, which was really scary because that's very like a fascist characteristic is like, I'm going to fucking lynch you. I mean, protesting events that we were at, it was stunning. It was stunning what happened. We were actually the center of like a fake news campaign in Venezuela calling us spies, saying to execute us if you saw us on site. After we left, our colleague at Telesur was actually shot in the back at one of these protests. So because of this happening, she was almost killed and targeted by these people. So it was a wake-up call. I mean, and there's so many, I think that the list goes on with any of these countries, and you'd probably find a very different narrative than what we're being told in the media. I mean, you could pretty much guess at this point, whatever the media is saying in lockstep uniformity, the truth is probably somewhere close to the opposite of that. But, you know, let's talk about the Trump era and where we're at now. Because Trump really represents this stage of late capitalism, right? I mean, we have a cabinet full of these billionaires, CEOs, the most generals since, I think, I don't know, World War II, reactionary right-wing religious fanatics. It's stunning. I mean, while everyone's hyper-focused on his tweets, and I am too, I mean, how could you not be? They're crazy. But, you know, he's basically implementing this right-wing reactionary legislature all across the country, because who's really running the show? Well, the evangelical right and Mike Pence. And he's basically just, he was given $5 billion in free advertising. And that's why we are where we are. It's not my show on RT. It's not, you know, it's not Russia. It's that the media basically gave him $5 billion of free advertising. Every speech he gave, they even filmed empty podiums just waiting. They're like, well, Trump's going to come out any second. We just have to wait and film the podium until he comes out. I mean, everything that he said, and his brand is being a piece of shit. I mean, he's a misogynist, racist, xenophobic, crazy person, right? And that's his brand. So when the media just hyper-focuses on certain things with, you know, even though I think the Stormy Daniels thing is really crazy and worth talking about, like the hyper focus on these issues, I think only helps his brand to his base. And I think it's really missing the boat. And the fake news phenomenon is really interesting because let's face it. I mean, he is right in a way. The corporate media is the largest purveyor of fake news. I mean, they really are in terms of war selling and manufacturing consent with the empire when it comes to military and hegemony around the world. So I think that the reason that they hate Trump so much is because he removes the mask. They don't like that. They want empire to be palatable. They want it to be professional and distinguished like Obama and like Hillary. And that's why you saw so many media conglomerates completely invested in Hillary's campaign. I mean, she got the most donations from those big corporate media donors. They don't care that Trump is xenophobic or racist or bigoted. Their policies are. What do you think war is? What do you think this global domination of our military is doing? Killing millions of people around the world. You think they give a shit about that? They don't care about that. They just care that he makes them look bad. They care because they don't want Russia and China to grow, right? They don't want them to get stronger. They see that people are abandoning the U.S. now, whether it be Angela Merkel or African countries are like, we don't want to fuck with you guys anymore. We're going to go to Russia and get loans. I mean, what the hell is going on there? So that's why. I mean, let's face reality here. And I can get into Russiagate really quickly, but I think that, you know, and then it goes to the fake news stuff where Trump, anything that doesn't worship the leader is fake news, right? So I guess the real news is Breitbart and InfoWars, according to Trump. So it's a very surreal time. We're in treacherous territory where we have a lot of work to do. And people are getting swept up into these mass hallucinations on basically both sides of the political aisle. And again, I mean, the majority of the mainstream media just all pretends like they're these resistance leaders and Trump is terrible. But why? not for the right reasons, right? They don't care about him carpet bombing neighborhoods, shooting up civilian casualties exponentially. They don't care that he's increased drone strikes over 400% since Obama. When he bombed Syria and when he used that Moab mini nuke in Afghanistan, they cheered him on. They applauded him. They were saying, wow, you're so presidential for the first time. This is great. We saw Don Lemon with a tear in his fucking eye. I swear to God. I mean, the media loves that. They cheer him on. There's uniform support and bipartisan praise for bombing people. When you see Chuck Schumer, who's a leading Democrat leader, he literally said that he wants Trump to be more aggressive on Russia and North Korea. I mean, that's stunning. The so-called resistance wants him to be more aggressive militarily. Yeah. So you think he's the next Hitler, but yet you want him to start many wars. That makes sense. You know, it's just amazing. And then you look at the Democratic Party in general. I mean, we're talking about a party who, that's why we have Trump. I mean, let's face facts here. The Democrats have learned nothing. What are they doing? Well, they're actually just putting in former intelligence officials and military members. There's a record number running for the Democratic positions in the next primaries. There's literally like half of the seats, if the projections go off, will be like literally intelligence officials and military officials that somehow the Democrats think that that's palatable. I don't know if they're trying to keep getting Republican votes or what. It really does not make any sense. Holy shit, it's really late, huh? Wow. Okay, wow. You know, I'm going to skip over Russiagate right now because I want to just go to the very end. You know, from Clinton to Bush to Obama to Trump, the war machine grinds on. It's not going to end. It doesn't start and it doesn't end with Trump. This, if there's one thing we know for sure, it's that this machine will continue. Again, Trump makes it look bad. They want him out so they can continue the full spectrum dominance of the U.S. empire. They know China and Russia are the ultimate goals beyond Iran, beyond Syria. We need journalists unafraid to call out that economic oppression, the brutal, violent oppression of our economic system. We need journalists to go after the jugular of the rotting and flailing empire. We have to hold power brokers accountable for their crimes, words, and deeds. We have to remind people the true cost of war. And political education is the key. History is instructive. But you can't expect the work to be rewarded in the system because it won't be. It really won't. History will only reward you for standing on the right side, but present day will not. You have to be an internationalist. We have to stand in solidarity with our brothers and sisters worldwide. And as an American journalist and as Americans in general, we have to focus on ending the U.S. empire. Keep our eyes on the ball. This is the world's source of suffering. This is the greatest threat to humankind. And it's our best hope to actually enrich millions of lives around the world and actually hope for a just and equitable future. Thank you guys so much. Sorry I took so long. I'm so sorry it's so late. I'm so sorry it's so late.
We were all in there with you.